Hey everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode 39 of Cloud Control. And you know, Kate, we get to do one of our favorite activities on this episode, which is go through a game showcase and see what we liked in it. And, you know, I always think those are some of the funnest things we do because we just get to see what's coming next and what we get to play.
Yeah, it's exciting. And I think this one is an extra exciting one because this is the first ever version of this showcase. The Triple I Initiative, which is like the new kind of like big indie showcase made by indie developers. And like they did like a fantastic job for the first time. And also it's just great to kind of like see the creativity that comes out of these like smaller but still very like competent and powerful studios. So yeah, some very, very cool announcements. Definitely a big one that I think we're both itching to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Something very unexpected. So that's going to be great. Hey, just before we start recapping the showcase though, just to give everyone a lay of the land, we're going to start off the show by going over the III showcase. And then we're going to talk about a couple of games afterwards, including Islets and Marvel's Midnight Suns, which I can't wait to talk about. Great game. But yeah, if you want to get in touch with the show, just to let everyone have a reminder, we're going to do a listener mailbag on one of the upcoming episodes. If you would like to write in a question for the show, anything to do with video games or, you know, adjacent topics, maybe The Last of Us TV show, season 2, you can get in touch with us, cloudcontrolpod@proton.me, and send all your questions over. That would be great. Can't wait to hear from you. But yeah, Kate, let's talk about the Triple I Initiative Showcase. Overall, I would say it was pretty entertaining. It was like 45 minutes. There was a lot of like city building kind of, you know, a lot of the times it's like, you know, in showcases, the Nintendo Directs, it's like, this is a farm building show. And in this one, I was kind of like, wow, this is like top down kind of, we're building a city. We're bridging over mountains. We're like, you know, putting down little settlements and building them up into castles and stuff like that. A lot of those kind of like top down games.
Watching these showcases, you definitely see the trends. And like, I think we're finally out of the like farming, the farming valley that we had been in for quite some time.
Farming valley, you're is right. That a game or is that like a term you're using?
I'm sure that's one of them. Like, I would be shocked if that's not a game. But the other new one that we're kind of into as well, I mean, the building city thing has kind of been going on for a while, I think. It's kind of like similar to your base building kind of that got popular. But the new one too is like the bullet heavens are everywhere. Yes. And of course Vampire Survive is what kind of kicked it off, and they returned here with something really cool to show that maybe we can get into quickly as well. But yeah, there's so many of these games now. Even like bigger studios are kind of doing their take on it, and like it's just like this new genre no one knew about 2 years ago, and now suddenly like here they are.
Yeah, that's true. Well, speaking of suddenly, here it is. Let's start off. I know we're both going to talk about some of the more exciting things. We're just going to take turns picking back and forth. But undoubtedly, the biggest and most exciting announcement for both of us at this showcase, led off the show, was the announcement that Megacrit is working on Slay the Spire 2. It's not an expansion for the original. I know a lot of people have kind of thought that might be the way, but it's been a while. And Slay the Spire 2, early access next year, like, man, I couldn't be more excited. They show at the end of the trailer, they show a kind of a new character, this ghostly, ethereal kind of Reaper guy. Who knows what his deck will be like? But oh my god, the amount of hours of Slay the Spire 2 that we're gonna collectively play is going to be insane.
I'm very excited. I feel like I like had some sort of prescience that got me thinking about Slay the Spire in the last month, because it was a game like I love Slay the Spire, right? It's I don't even know if there's been a better deck builder game since Slay the Spire kind of kicked off the genre. And I think it's still a fantastic game. Every now and again I go back to it, just do a couple runs, you know, something cozy to do in the evening. But in the last month I just had a kind of this like urge to play Slay the Spire, and so I hadn't really ever engaged with a lot of the mod content, even though I know that's like a very like active community doing all kinds of modding for new relics, new characters, new like you know, enemies to fight, all sorts of things. And so the last month, every now and again, maybe at least once or twice a week, I've just had like an hour in the evening where I've downloaded a mod, like a new character, and just played a run as a new character just to see some like kind of like quote unquote like new content for Slay the Spire. So it's kind of been on my mind. I've sort of had a like a personal resurgence since the game. And then when I saw Slay the Spire 2, I was like, I felt it coming, like I knew.
You channeled it.
Yeah. I did. I channeled it. Like, this is great. Like, this is the kind of game where, like, it's not necessarily the top on my list in terms of, like, oh my god, I'm so excited, I can't wait for it. But it is top on the list in terms of, I will buy this immediately once it's out, and I will play another 200 hours of it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where it's one of the rare games, honestly, where you can know it's coming, and you guarantee, like, I'm going to like this game. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. I have no hesitation that my money will be well spent just because of the sheer, like, impressive way the first game captured my life.
And, yeah, exactly. You know. Like, it was an incredible game. Nothing else is quite... I mean, there's been some really good deck.
Well, I mean, I'm hooked on Balatro right now. It's kind of rehooked me into this type of genre, too. So by the time I'm kind of over that game at the end of the year or whatever, I'll be, oh, man, like, when's the early access for Slay the Spire 2? Like, I guess it's early in the year, so that might line up perfectly.
You know, it might be. And this is the kind of game, too, where, like, I actually will, I think, be excited to play the early access. I find that often I'm conflicted in terms of I really want to play and I want to be part of the discussion. But I don't necessarily like the idea, like, having the option to play early access, because I always think, like, I don't want to get burned out. I want, like, the full, like, genuine experience of playing the game once it's been released and all the features are here and I'm not, like, you know, then I'm still excited for the full release instead of, well, that's cool, but I've already played, you know, 20, 40 hours. But
yeah, it feels
this
cheap.
Is the kind of game. Exactly. But this is the kind of game where I think, like, it's kind of almost cooler to see it progress and how things change in the iterations. And of course, like, you know, maybe the early access doesn't have every single character. Like, there's still a lot to unlock and see. And I feel like it really fits that early access perfectly, because it's all about doing that run over and over again and seeing what's new. And if there's constantly new stuff coming out, you have constantly new things to unlock, and it's gonna be amazing. Yeah. And you know what, Silent is in that trailer. He looked so cool.
It's the best deck for sure. It's
the best character. Yeah, so it'll be cool to see how they come back to the genre and what they do, what kind of, like, new fresh things they're gonna do for two. And just I'm sure they'll stay on top of it. Like, I trust them with all of my heart.
I agree. Okay, well, let's talk about some other games that were shown today. I guess maybe we'll just go back and forth with a few. We're not going to cover everything shown, but, you know, I want to start off. One that really stuck out to me, and it's not a new game. I guess it's been out on PC, but I'm not doing a lot of gaming on my PC, as people will know. So I guess I just missed it. But Shadow of Doubt looked really cool to me. This is the one from Fire Shrine and Coal Powered Games. It's actually an English developer, but it's coming to consoles. And it's that detective game that kind of had it's not really Minecraft, but it's that kind of, like, pixel square block kind of 3D narrative. But it's the detective game, and it looked really cool, like, going around the city and putting together clues and talking to different people and gathering evidence. You know, like, there was one point where you're investigating this room in the trailer and the person pulls up the blinds and notices a bullet hole from the window. And I guess, does that mean you have to go investigate the building to the side of it? It looked pretty in-depth. And, you know, it's hard to tell exactly what this game will be like from a trailer. I know, like, trailers can be so misleading. It takes me back to, like, 12 minutes. Like, how cool did that game look in a trailer? And it ended up being not great. So it's hard to tell. But the premise of this looked really cool, and I think anytime a game can present this kind of sandbox sort of crime solving, that's something I'm very interested in if it works well.
I completely agree. Like, these are the kind of games that always kind of go on my, like, to watch list. Because I think those, like, detective case solving games are so interesting when they're done well, but they're hard to kind of, like, end up with that like level of satisfaction you're looking for.
Yeah.
And I like this. I don't know, something about the art kind of, like, intrigued me too. Like, it was charming in its own way, and it felt like it was really gonna, I don't know, I just got the impression it was, like, gonna be a lot about the cases and less about, like, here's this cool world to explore, which maybe appealed to me more as well.
Yeah, my impression of it honestly was like, hey, here's some people that have some really cool ideas in terms of like crime scenarios and how you're going to solve it. And because it's an indie game, probably with a smaller budget or team, they were like, hey, let's just go with kind of a more easy, well, I don't want to put words in their mouth, I don't make a game, but you know, there's some more graphically impressive games that you would say you've seen in this showcase. Maybe we'll sacrifice a bit there and really make sure these scenarios and the world functions super well. And I hope that's what this is, because it looks cool.
There's also like an interesting level of like clarity to it as well, with like having the really like pared back, like minimal aesthetic to it. And like, I don't know, because everything's like kind of made of blocks almost. Like, I think you could maybe do some like interesting like environmental clues because there's such a consistent art style.
True. So yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
It's got pretty good reviews. I briefly looked it up because, you know, the Metacritic's out for PC and it's getting like pretty decent scores. So I think it'll be one to watch. But
interesting.
Yeah, anyway.
Awesome. Well, I will go next, and I would be remiss not to just at least give some praise over to Red Hook Studios, the developers of Darkest Dungeon. It's a series that I just have always been in love with. It's, you know, just the aesthetic alone, I feel like I have to play it. Like, I love the kind of, like, creepy, Lovecrafty, like, eldritch, but also the kind of, like, old-timey, like, archaic sort of, like, knights and blood and witches and plague doctors and that kind of stuff. Like, I just love it. And obviously the announcer, like, everybody knows the Darkest Dungeon guy. He's amazing. But Darkest Dungeon 2 came out, and it's a great game, but a lot of people kind of didn't mesh with where they kind of took some different paths from the first game. And I think that while I do really enjoy playing 2, I kind of preferred the system to 1 as well. So Red Hook Studios has listened to players' feedback, and this, I believe, is the first time that it has been revealed. So there's a free update coming to Darkest Dungeon 2, which is called Kingdoms Mode, and it's kind of like a hybrid between Darkest Dungeon 1 and Darkest Dungeon 2. So it's still got some new elements and some new innovations they made for 2, but it's pulling a lot more from how Darkest Dungeon 1 was organized and structured. And I think that's such a cool thing. Like, this is definitely not some, or like it definitely doesn't come across as something that was initially planned for the game on release, but something that the studio has taken as feedback, and then they've worked and created this like completely new game mode that kind of is like intended to be the best of both worlds, or to give you a little bit more of that experience of what you enjoyed from 1 in the framework of 2. And like, it's just so cool. And they're like, yeah, going to be a free update. Just come play Kingdoms. It's awesome. It looks amazing. I just got to shout them out. Like, what a good guy, Red Hook Studios.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think we're seeing something, you know, the platformification of games, you know, like this is something where they can, a lot of studios are doing that, like making add-ons to their games versus making a whole new sequel. And I think that's a way they can take like, oh, people didn't love maybe everything about Darkest Dungeon 2, so let's include this new mode and get some more players in. You know, I think it's something that definitely would be likely for Slay the Spire 2. I could absolutely see that becoming kind of a platform in the same way.
Exactly. But at the same time, it's just, it's so nice to see, like, you want to support these developers that are like, it's a free update. Please enjoy more content for our game. As opposed to like, you know, how many studios are like, we're charging you for fast travel, like buy the fast travel extension. Many companies want to like nickel and dime you for every single penny. And it just shows like such a good, like, love of their craft to put in the extra effort, and then also just like, you know, we're doing it because we want our fans to love our games. And then, you know, Darkest Dungeon 3 comes along, absolutely, I'm in line for it. So it's a win-win, but it's the exact kind of win-win that like you want to see, right?
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Another game that's added some DLC to the existing game, and I admittedly don't know, how about that for a segue, if this is a free DLC or not. It didn't say in the trailer, and usually if it's free, it's going to say free. So I'm assuming it's a bit of a paid DLC, but Vampire Survivors is getting a Contra DLC, which is very cool. Crossover I wouldn't have initially thought of, but it actually makes a lot of sense given the Konami connection to like Castlevania with that game. And obviously like the weapons in Contra translate super well into a game like Vampire Survivors. You know, think about the laser gun and the spread gun and all the different things from Contra, you know, but the super gun. Yeah. But I think that's a really cool way to sort of add some new life into the game. You know, a lot of it comes down to using the same weapons, and that game, you know, I've done quite a few runs of it, but it gets pretty samey after a while with a lot of the pickups, mm-hmm. and you know, you're doing a lot of the same kind of maps and everything. So I think introducing some new fresh, like, oh, these are guns now, you know, different energy weapons and different characters, like, mm-hmm. that'll be a great way to keep that game going. And man, the fact that it's on mobile, like, I've resisted downloading it on mobile because I just know it would be a huge time sink compared to playing it on Xbox. But, you know, similar to Slay the Spire, it's just a fun game to every once in a while when you want to listen to a podcast or something, play a round of Vampire Survivors. You know, it really doesn't require that type of concentration. And mm-hmm. this looks like a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, just get your instant dopamine hit by playing some Vampire. I've got to say, too, to shout them out, like, when I was watching it, I was making a few notes of just, ooh, game to remember, partially to talk about here, and partially just so that I remembered to go and wishlist them later and keep an eye on them. And I wrote down here, I'm like, damn, Vampire Survive sold so well, they could afford the coolest trailer for their DLC.
This is a sick trailer.
Because that trailer was sick. It was, yeah, like,
and they just get the handshake, like, in at the end.
Oh my god, that like 80s handshake by the explosion. Like, if you didn't watch the showcase, and even if you don't care about Vampire Survive, like, that's just like a fun as hell trailer to go and watch. And like, it really reminded me of why I love watching these conferences so much. Because even if it's a game that I'm not really interested in, I know I'm not going to buy it. I know I'm not going to play it. It's so fun to just watch these trailers and like see what kind of cool, crazy things people are thinking up. Mm-hmm. That is a good game. Okay, well, I've got one more for you, and I've got to shout out Humble Games for Wizards of Legend 2. And I think Wizards of Legend was a game I talked probably like really early on in the podcast about, because a friend of mine, especially during COVID, we played a lot of Wizard of Legend. It's a super fun couch co-op game, but I guess it's kind of like a maybe like a Hades sort of style combat. It's that really fast paced kind of same sort of viewpoint, but you are different wizards, and you get like a bunch of elemental spells, and you have like spell slots. So as you go, they're kind of like roguelike runs that you go, and you have to beat a few different bosses. You get to the final boss, like that kind of typical style. But it's just really cool because there's so many different spells. Like, we were shocked by just the amount of content there kept being. We were like, okay, there's no way, like, you know, we're not almost been through everything, and then you look at your spell companion and it's like, you have 20% of the spells unlocked. It's like, holy shit, like, there's just so much. And it's just really fun, cool, creative things, right? Like, and the elements are always cool. Like, I don't know, maybe that's a bias of mine.
Which is your favorite element in the game?
Ah, chain lightning, man, always. It's always the chain lightning. But, you know, everything was cool, and they were all, like, really unique. And, you know, wind was awesome. You had really cool dashes, and you'd have, like, these big, like, wind sickles you could shoot out, and you know, fire was cool and just was chaotic all over the screen. And then earth is always the very controlled one. So it was just a really, really creative game. And it was fun to do runs of. And because there were so many options and so many different like trinkets you could equip and things like that, every run felt like you could have a very distinctive like character setup. So I mean, a game like Hades is obviously the highest level of quality, but there's only so many weapons, and, you know, you kind of want to get the same sort of boons after a while. You kind of feel like you know what you like. But in this kind of game, I felt like every run would be like, okay, I'm going to be like a water mage and just be water this time. And then next time be like, okay, I'm going to be like fire and ice. And like, we just always have some kind of like interesting creative idea that we'd come up with. So anyway, first game was amazing. They've made a sequel. It looks to be basically just more of the same. It's up to 4-player co-op, which I think would be like probably really chaotic to play with a lot of people because it's quite fast paced, but super, super fun just, you know, being a team of elemental wizards running around. So I'm 100% on this game. Like, I'm definitely getting it, definitely playing it couch co-op. The only kind of negative thing I would say from this game is that I think it looks fantastic. It's got a really beautiful cell shaded art style. It looks great. The elements look amazing. Looks fantastic. But the original game had this like really cool pixel art. Mm-hmm. And I kind of am a little bit sad that they, you know, went away from that and did a different style. And that's completely within their rights to do so. But I just thought the first game was so like, I don't know, had this like really beautiful nostalgic charm to it. And I think the cell shading is just like, it's so common these days. And yeah. I kind of miss the pixel style a little bit. So
Yeah, it's interesting. When you bring that one up, I had totally forgotten you'd played that game. And to me, that's one of those I always see, like, just, you know, it's just on the store when you go on and you're browsing around. And, you know, when I saw it in this showcase, I was kind of like, oh, there's some sort of, you know, it's quote unquote generic looking Hades kind of knockoff. So I guess it's kind of what it is. But it looks like it would be fun co-op, you know, a lot more chaotic than, you know, kind of Castle Crashers meets Hades almost.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I would say it's not quite as like casual as Castle Crashers, but it's also not the same kind of like, it's also not on the same scale of Hades in terms of like how difficult and like the skill ceiling can be. So yeah, I guess it's like somewhere in the middle, maybe skewed slightly towards Hades, but like definitely kind of in that like, yeah, just grab some friends and hang out kind of game. It works for that as well. But
yeah.
Kind of looks like just one of the generic one in the bunch now, but I it is gonna be good.
No, that's cool though. That's cool. I got a couple more I wanted to mention just quickly, I guess. Number one, okay. Speaking of art styles, we certainly cannot leave talking about this showcase without mentioning Mouse. Now this is
just not Cuphead. Do not get
this
tricked.
Is not Cuphead. But man, you know, like, I mean, this game, obviously, Cuphead is, like, unmatched in terms of its art style and production value, and I wouldn't say this looks as impressive as that, but I think the fact that it is a first-person shooter and you're moving around a 3D space and it does look as impressive as it does is something to be commended, at least in this trailer. You know, you never know how it's going to come together as the final product, but the way that it looks in this trailer, you know, it's impressive, and I was so blown away playing Cuphead. I'm absolutely looking for more of those type of experiences with these kind of unique, like, old school cartoon art styles. And if this game comes together to be any kind of fun experience, you know, even approaching what Cuphead had delivered, I'm absolutely interested in this. And I think it's so cool, kind of like Lies of P, that these old school cartoons are getting now made free use, and obviously Mickey Mouse is, like, you know, not involved Disney-wise in this game, but it's clearly based off.
This is legally distinct Mickey Mouse.
Exactly, yeah. But I think this art style is just so catching, and it hasn't been overdone yet. You know, it's only really Cuphead that's pulled it off. So if we can have another game that sort of does it, that would make me really happy. The only thing that I would say, you know, makes me a little skeptical is I looked up the producer, the studio, sorry, of this game, Fumi Games, and this is their third game from what I could see. And the first two, I'm not super... You know, I don't have a lot of faith that they were anything of quality. It's Galaxy Taxi and Kids Party Checkers. So, you know,
Checkers?
I don't want to shit on those games, but I've, you know, we probably know what we're getting into with those. This looks like quite a step up. So hopefully they can pull it off because it looks really cool.
This is a little bit more of an ambitious product, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it looks really cool. And I, you know, this is absolutely one that I'm going to watch because, if you see it in action, you'll probably know why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. If you can trick me for the first 3 seconds of your trailer that it's Cuphead, you've made a good trailer.
That's true.
Awesome. Well, I think I have one more game to shout out. And this, like, okay, well, first of all, Hyper Light Breaker. But we've talked about Hyper Light Breaker. Yeah. We've seen it. That looks awesome. So the other one I want to shout out is 33 Immortals. And this is a game I think we've also seen in the past, but it's been announced there's a closed beta coming in mid-May on PC. And I think I'm going to check it out. Like, I just think the idea of this game is so unique. And I'm so curious to see kind of what the community will evolve it into. Because the premise of this game is that it is a co-op action roguelike online for 33 players.
I know.
That's weird, right? Like, that's bizarre. But it's really cool. Like, first of all, the game is gorgeous. It's made by Thunder Lotus, who did, I think, their most recent game was Spiritfarer, which is a completely different kind of game. Like, that is not an action game at all. Like, Spiritfarer is a you know, beautiful world and narrative. But this is a completely different kind of take. Like, they're pulling a super giant and just they've pivoted completely.
Well, I think Thunder Lotus is the publisher.
Okay. Maybe that's what I'm getting mixed up then. Because all the trailers come up, it was just Thunder Lotus all over it. So I assume they were the developer.
Oh no, they are the development studio. I'm wrong. They are developer. Okay. That's right. Spiritfarer and Jotun they did as well.
Yeah, it's just really kind of, I don't know. But it's cool to try something new. But the game looks gorgeous. It's got this beautiful art style. Actually reminds me a bit of Supergiant, the way that it looks now that I've made that comparison. But it just looks like a really fun kind of action game. Like, there's a, you know, big bosses with a big area of effect attacks that you've got to dodge. And the idea, I guess, is that you're 33 and you've got to take down enemies throughout the areas, and then eventually a big boss spawns, and it's kind of almost like doing a raid in something like World of Warcraft.
True, actually, that's a good point.
But I'm just curious to like how it kind of works with the interaction. Like, it seems like there's times where you can like all you can team up with a couple other people, and you all get like do a big attack together or get some shields, and so it seems like there's some decent like co-op elements to it. But then at the same time, it's 33 people. Like, I don't think there's going to be a voice chat. Like, it's just kind of going to be sort
it would
of
be
like
insane if there was a voice chat and everyone's trying to coordinate on there. Like, could you imagine?
Right, like you'd never get a word in. Like, it would be a nightmare. And so, you know, it's one of those games where I think it really like lives or dies based on how people approach the game and like what kind of, you know, community arises from it. And I think there's a world where it just feels hectic and it feels like people aren't coordinated and, you know, everyone's kind of going off and doing their own thing and it doesn't feel very social. But then there's also a world where, you know, you find really good ways to communicate with people and people are so incredibly creative about how they can kind of interact with limited means within games. And you think of something like Journey, or you think of, you know, the funny things people do when you come into Dark Souls and they like pretend to be a bush and like you run around and like, you know, just even small things, like even the way people like do stuff in Snap sometimes, like you're so limited, but you have these interactions with people and you really kind of can feel like you connected on something. You both thought something was funny. You both have the same kind of idea. And I think like, I feel like it has so much potential to kind of develop its own language that people would understand, like, you know, when to join in on the attacks and what kind of ways to navigate the levels. So I don't know, maybe I'm being a little too hopeful, but
yeah, I don't know. Like, it could go any which way, right? It could also be like Metroid Federation Force that needs a specific number of players, and you know, it's hard to get that, and you never know. But the concept is very cool, very unique. So you have to commend them for trying something out of the box.
Mm-hmm, exactly, it's a cool idea. It looks great. I mean, Spiritfarer was a cool game, so we'll see what happens.
yeah, for sure. They got pedigree. That's for sure. Just quickly, I wanted to shout out just one more game, which is Gestalt, Steam, and Cinder, just for the reason that I think this is not a brand new game that we haven't seen before, but this is the first time I've seen it. And my God, this is just reskin Mega Man Zero. Like, the slash is the same. The way that her hair moves is the same. You're doing the wall jumps. You're doing the dashes. You have a, you know, I guess there's a skill tree in this one, which I don't think was in Mega Man Zero. Anyway, my friend Brandon is a huge Mega Man Zero fan, like legit one of his favorite games all the way back on the Game Boy Advance. And I just have to shout this out because of that reason. And like, this is such a homage to that game. And I think the graphics look pretty cool. You know, I don't think it's the type of thing I would play, but it's cool to see these games that are no longer made kind of get revived in a new indie sense. So I think just it's cool what they're doing with this game. But yeah, I guess that's probably it for the showcase. There was a sort of Age of Mythology looking game where there are dinosaurs and knights and you know, some other games like that. But yeah, check out the showcase. I would say it's worth a watch, especially if you like kind of strategy games, top-down stuff, Australian outbacks.
Oh my God, you know what? Okay, one thing, I won't spend long on it because it's we've hit our roadblock for the end of the studio, but I realized, oh my God, that Prince of Persia game looked awesome too.
It did,
at the end.
Yeah, it did. I questionable if it's indie considering like Ubisoft and all that, but
yeah, it does look very cool. I think it's like also in partnership with the people that made Dead Cells. I think it's the Dead Cells studio making it in partnership with Ubisoft, so that's how it gets it's indie pedigree.
That's how they skirt the rules and put it in.
So yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a loophole, but I mean, Dead Cells was a hell of a good game. The trailer for this was awesome. You know, it looks so fluid with the back flipping, and I don't think I've ever been excited about a Prince of Persia game before.
I want to play the other one that just came out.
That's true. That one did look good. That one did look good, but this one has Dead Cells developers.
I think I didn't love Dead Cells, though. Maybe this is the one for you, and I'll play the other one, and we'll tag team Prince of Persia.
We'll tag team Prince of Persia, and then, we'll see who won at the end of it.
Cool, I like it.
Perfect. Okay, well, let's move on then. We're still going to stay in the indie zone, but not
specifically. I like the indie zone. Indie zone's a good place to be.
You know, it's cozy, it's comfy. Sometimes it shocks you. But I played and this was a complete out of surprise, like complete surprise game I played. I played Islets? Islets? I think it's Islets. I'm going to go with Islets because with Island too. Is, you know, is how you pronounce it. So I'm going to say Islets. And this was a game I had never heard of before, and it was the free Epic Game of the Week a few weeks back. And I, you know, you go on the store page, you accept all these games, Epic thanks you for your purchase, and you kind of do an awkward handshake with them, like, oh, you're welcome.
It's like that Michael Scott meme where it's like the boss is giving him something and he's done shit all.
Yeah, and you're like, thanks, I'll never play this, thank you. But, you know, I had just finished a game. I was in the middle of like, what am I? I finished Lies of P. I'm like, what am I going to play next? I have all this like Lies of P energy. And this game looked cute and it was a Metroidvania. And I was like, you know what? Whatever. I'm just going to download it and try it. And I 100%ed the game. It was awesome.
It's funny how that goes sometimes.
That's funny how it goes. I mean, it was about maybe 7-8 hours. So it's not a huge ask of your time. But I really enjoyed it. Like it calls itself a wholesome Metroidvania, which I think is pretty true. It's got a beautiful art style, kind of that, like, I don't know, I don't want to say cel-shaded, but it's that very common, like,
it's
painted, cel-shaded, kind of colorful.
It sort of reminds me that, like, in a weird way of Hollow Knight, but just, like, very lightened and friendly looking.
Yeah. It's kind of, that's a good way to describe it. It's kind of like cute, friendly Hollow Knight.
Yeah. Not the environment so much, but the characters, I would say.
Yeah. The characters are kind of similar. You play as like a little mouse. He's very cute. But I just really liked the world. Like, it really was very creatively designed. Like, there's some really neat monster types. There's really interesting like environments. There's like a graveyard kind of area that's really cool. And it has these like spirit, like dead fish spirits that float around that you can't touch and you kind of got to avoid. And it has like all sorts of various, there's one level where it's just raining all the time. And it's kind of this like dark, dreary gray. Like, it was very visually appealing to look at. And then it was just really fun to play as well. Like, I would say it's quite a good Metroidvania if you want a little bit more of a relaxing and like kind of quote unquote casual experience. It's definitely not as demanding as something like Hollow Knight. It's very accessible. It has a lot of difficulty options, which you can change at any time as well, which is really nice. And that'll change things like how much damage attacks do, you know, how many projectiles an enemy might shoot out in the attack, stuff like that. So it's pretty easy to kind of pick how you want to engage with it. But it was fun. Like, I found the exploration was really satisfying. There were good places where I was like, okay, I know I have to come back later with this upgrade, but it also wasn't like tedious to backtrack. It was a nice blend. Some of the like upgrades you get are pretty cool. Like, obviously there's like the double jump is your classic kind of upgrade, but you want a few other like kind of, I don't know, things I hadn't seen before, I'll say. Hmm. And the combat surprised me. Like, it starts out quite simple and you're like, okay, I see how this is going to be just a cute Metroidvania. I've got it. But not too far into the game, and I'll say this not because it's a spoiler, because it's a good hook, is this game secretly has some like bullet hell bosses as well. Oh, and wow. I was not at all expecting that, but it was a really nice change of pace where sometimes you would fight these like action-y type bosses. They have a few different attacks. You learn like this is the attack that does projectiles, and then they jump at you, and then they do like whatever, right? And then you get to phase two and they do the same attack, but they're a little bit harder. And so you'd fight those and it'd be a good time. And then the next boss you come up against is like, it's just a bullet hell, dodge them for 5 minutes. And it really like kind of made every boss feel very fresh. And there are a couple bosses where there's like an element of both, or maybe you have to fight a few bosses back to back. And it was really fun. Like, I felt that everything was paced very well in the game, and that even though it was not necessarily the most like, you know, polished game or the most like, you know, had the best platforming or had the best combat, like, it was just the sum of all its parts together made for a really nice experience. And every time I was kind of just getting like, okay, I think I've explored this area enough, like, I'm ready for the next thing. The next thing would be like right on the horizon, and it just kept giving these like little morsels, and I kept going across just at this pace, and suddenly the game was over and I was upset.
That's a good feeling though, you know, when a game ends like that versus, oh my god, I still have, you know, 3 more hours to go through before.
Yeah, it was perfect. It's just a really smart system with how it's broken up. Like the premise is that there are these four islets and they've all been disconnected and you have to connect them back up together. And so you have to go to each one and like turn on like the magnet that like sticks it to that sticks them together. So it's kind of silly, but once you get them all, so you can go on each one and then once they're connected, there's some like connecting paths that are extra you can go to. And it just worked really well for like four distinct areas, but they all kind of like conjoin and there's like the in between parts. Yeah, it was really good. I will say the other thing too is this game was very funny. There's a few, especially some of the supporting cast characters, I was genuinely cracking up. Like it kind of had like a Mario, a Paper Mario sort of
Oh,
style
really?
humor.
Okay.
But some characters were so funny. Like there's this one area where you're in like a haunted tomb kind of aesthetic. And there's a character there, and he greets you, and he's like, "Oh, I'm the tour guide. Like, let me take you on a tour." And it's like incredibly obvious the whole time that he's trying to like sacrifice you to like the monster in the tomb, and like this is not a legit tour, and it's like super shady. But he's so funny, you just go along with it because you have to progress the game. And he's just at every time he's like, "Ah, oh, yes. The next part of the tour, like, please follow me. No photography allowed." Like, everything he said was so funny. And there's like a cast of characters that you keep kind of interacting with as you go. And each one of them has their own little funny quirk. And I just 100% bought into every single little one of them. And it's that kind of like Nintendo-y style feel to play this game where you're just charmed the entire way through.
Yeah, that's a good endorsement. I was going to ask you in terms of our gradient of platforming versus combat, kind of how where this game might fall. Is it which of those sides is it more geared towards, if any? I
I would
wasn't
say
really able to
it's
tell.
really in the middle. If I would say maybe it's like 52% platforming.
52%, okay.
52. I would say that there's definitely like a decent amount of bosses that you fight, and those are the interesting parts of combat. But in the world where you're exploring, the challenge in exploring comes more from the platforming, but then you have the bosses, which are kind of the, I guess, quote unquote, like challenges of the game. But I think it's quite light. Like it's definitely not something like Hollow Knight where you're going to be running up against bosses and you're going to be stuck. Like it is absolutely not that kind of game. The bosses are fun and creative, but they're not incredibly difficult to fight. And in the platforming, I would say the same way. Like it's something that feels really satisfying to get through. And they come up with a lot of really creative ideas for the platforming. So I would say maybe some of the platforming stood out to me as some of the most interesting parts of the game. But I think it's really definitely in the middle in terms of that scale these games tend to be on somewhere.
Okay, that's interesting too. And the other thing is the map looks really big for this. Are you able to put like markers down on there, or how well is it coded in terms of the backtracking and all that stuff?
So the map is quite it's quite large. You kind of what's nice about the game is because that islet structure I mentioned, where you kind of go to each one and then you're at the end when you've kind of completed when you can conjoin them. So even though the overall map is quite large, you sort of do it in four chunks instead of having this like one massive map. And then it's pretty good. Like the map is quite bare, but when you acquire the currency, you can buy different types of markers. So it's not like Hollow, it's not as amazing as Hollow Knight, where you can also put down your own markers, and like that is like a standard that I want every game to have now. But it's pretty good about showing you like kind of landmarks as you find them, and then you can buy like show me the warp points and show me the saves. And at the end too, what I absolutely adore in this game, and I was like praising it so much when I unlocked this feature, was it's quite expensive, so you can't buy it very early. But once you're kind of in the late game stage, you can buy show me where the upgrades are.
Wow, that
And
would be useful in a lot of other ones.
the upgrades are basically like the one kind of collectible there is. They don't bother with like gold coins and feathers and all these, blue gems. Like you don't search for a million different things. You just get upgrades. And upgrades are cool because when you get one, you get from three things to pick, and it's like you do a little bit more damage, you have more health, you have more like arrows in your quiver, or, you know, when you kill an enemy, they do a little like explosion that can hurt enemies beside them. So you find an upgrade and you get to pick something you want. It feels really fun and exciting to get one because you're not just stronger in a kind of difficult to quantify way. You have a certain little upgrade that you've picked. And it's, you know, that's how you 100% the game. So you buy the thing for your map that tells you where all the upgrades are. Any place you've been to that has an upgrade is now shown on your map. So you get to backtrack and go exactly where you need to go to find the thing. You're not running around, you know, lost. You're not looking up a guide on Google for the area to be like, I'm 96% done. Which of these ones did I miss? And I'll read through the list until one doesn't look familiar. Like, the game's just like, here you go. You've made it to the end game. This is what you're missing. Would you like to go back and get it? And you're like, I would absolutely love to spend 20 minutes going and collecting them. Thank you.
Comfy and cozy at its finest. That sounds great, actually.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Like, they just, they don't hold your hand to the point where you feel like insulted, but they're like, here's some nice quality of life. You've done a great job. Hope you like the game.
Perfect. I should check it out. I definitely claimed it too on the, on the Steam, or was it Steam? No, it wasn't. It was Epic.
It was the Epic free game. Yeah, it's $25 on Steam in Canada. And I think that's a fair price for the game. But if you can play it for free, you can't really complain about that. Yeah,
that is true. Cool. Well, let me shift gears here and talk about a game that's certainly not an indie game. But it's Marvel's Midnight Suns. And I played this actually a few months ago now. Maybe like a month ago when we were just on our recording hiatus. But man... I know you got to play just a little bit when you were over at my place one time, but what a fun experience this was. I absolutely loved Marvel's Midnight Suns. And you know why? Is because it's got a little bit of that Persona energy where the game is split half and half. You know, it's one of the things we talked about Persona last time was that it's so addicting the way that you're going back to your regular life and then you're in the dungeons and it's just that perfect balance of doing those two things. And while I don't think Midnight Suns kind of hits that balance in the same way, it still really helps it's paced really nicely. And there's just enough of both where I think you get what you need out of the game. Although definitely the combat is a lot more of the focus in this one versus Persona where, you know, it's more 50-50. But so this game basically it's like a sim game where you're a new Marvel character. You are the Hunter. And you are the daughter of Lilith, who is the big evil character in the game. And essentially, you're working with a bunch of various Marvel heroes to thwart her evil plan. It's a very standard Marvel kind of plot. But the real joy of like the story part of the game is really getting to know the characters and specifically what their viewpoints are on like the major battle at hand. And sort of who's aligning with who, depending on some dialogue choices. And also, like, you know, the Avengers characters will typically stick together. And the Runaways characters will probably stick together, like Nico and Ghost Rider and them. So it's pretty cool watching those dynamics. And you get a lot of the smaller moments, which you don't get in a lot of other Marvel properties, I guess. Unless you read a lot of comics and stuff. So I thought that was really cool.
I hear you get to join a book club too.
You do get to join a book club.
That's very exciting. Shout out to the book club I'm in. You guys are awesome.
You get to join a book club. You get to join a mechanics club. You know, you can do your little standard hangouts and stuff with the characters. You can have a drink or watch a movie or play some cards or whatever. And that stuff is fine. You know, it's mostly just like a, you know, in Persona, like a lot of it, you don't really care too much about like really the activity. There's just some kind of story beats here and there that are great. It's kind of the same idea. I definitely wouldn't say it's super interesting a lot of the time, but at the same time, I would say for sure that if it's, you know, you've seen a lot of memes about, oh, why would I want to go and play chess with Wolverine? Like, what a stupid game. Like, that is totally overblown and meme by the internet. Like, it's such a tiny part of the game in comparison to what you're doing most of the time. And it's also nowhere near as cringy as people make it out to be. Like, you're not sitting in the pool with Wolverine, like drinking margaritas and talking about The Bachelor or something, you know? Like...
Okay. First of all, that sounds like a hilarious scene that should be in the game, though. Like, that sounds amazing. But second of all, it's really easy to cherry pick, right? Like, with no context, this is a cringy thing that happened and like, whatever. Like, Wolverine would never say that. But at the same time, like, I don't know. Maybe it's nice to have a different take on the character. This Wolverine is into margaritas in the pool. Like, why can't Wolverine... drink a margarita, you know?
Yeah. You know, a lot of the characters, though, they're like exactly how you'd expect. I think mm-hmm. especially Peter Parker, like he shows up in the game and he's exactly like, it's just like interacting with Peter, and the things he says is exactly kind of how you think he'd behave. But at the same time, they're not the MCU iterations of these characters. So it's mm-hmm. it's refreshing. But I guess, yeah, that's like the Abbey portion of the game. It's kind of the hub world, the Abbey. It's like this, you know, there's some like witches, I forget, Agatha Harkness and them are kind of there. This is their base we're staying in. And so it's sort of the main hub of what you're doing outside of combat. This is where you're doing your interactions. You're also able to do a lot of your upgrades there. So you're, you know, working on your characters and upgrading them, or I'll get into the cards in a minute, but you're unlocking new booster packs and kind of arranging your skills and whatnot. So you're kind of just running around and doing your maintenance stuff there at the Abbey. You can also go and explore like a bunch of the grounds outside, like running around. But I didn't really do a lot of that, and I didn't really see a need to. So I know there's a lot of collectibles and like tarot cards and extra things you can find. But I wasn't compelled so much, so I can't really speak to that. But I guess I'll talk to you about the deck building, because this is the coolest part and it leads into the combat. So what makes this game unique, I guess, aside from being like a Marvel sim slash like turn-based strategy game, is that instead of just having skills on each of your characters, you have a deck for each of them. So I think it's 8 or 10 cards you get. And so you'll have kind of this deck for each character, and each one has their own specialty, as you can imagine. Like Wolverine jumps around the map and makes guys bleed and slashes people, and Ghost Rider has different fire and all this different stuff. So you're trying to sort of put together these skill decks of cards for each of your characters, and then when you go into a combat scenario, you'll bring three characters with you, combine their three decks together, and you draw cards each turn, and that's how you're playing your skills. And so as you go, you can imagine your roster of characters gets bigger, and your amount of cards for those characters get bigger, and you can kind of augment them and upgrade them in different ways to give different skills. And although it's not like a heavy deck building emphasis, you know, you don't have to have played Magic or anything like that, it's pretty easy. They recommend kind of what they should, you know, what you should put in your deck, but it certainly makes the game very unique, the way that you're emphasized to kind of redraw cards, or like, you know, cards either have a cost of energy or they will be free and they will produce energy for you. So it's a mix of having enough cards to do both of those different functions, and some characters have more energy generation versus some of them require more to use their skills. So you're always balancing like all of those factors. And it was just very, very engaging in opening the packs and upgrading the cards, and, you know, seeing the different synergies that can go together with certain characters. Like I loved playing with Magic, who makes portals. She can put on the different maps and knock characters through, move their locations. And then she paired so well with someone like Spider-Man, who could move around the map and use the environmental hazards. I thought that was such a fun way to play the game versus just brute strengthening with like the strongest attack characters, mm-hmm. Just depending how you want to play. So I really enjoyed the combat and the variety there.
Yeah, that system seemed really cool. Like even from just playing, like I think I played one mission when I was over one time, and the character combinations seemed really cool, and the environmental things were really interesting as well, which I really like. It was a lot of kind of emphasis on like even just like have your characters ram into another character, or like do you have enough resources to like throw someone into someone else, or like push them into a lamppost or something like that, like throw this desk at them, various things yeah. like that. Like, and I think that stuff is really cool, because like, yeah, the deck building almost kind of like needs to be a little bit simplified, because there's a lot of complexity in how you use it in combination with like what you're up against. And then also those extra factors as well. Like I could see like one of those systems that's kind of easy to understand at the beginning, but then like has a lot of depth in terms of how you want to actually implement it. And like each scenario seem like it might feel a little bit different, and not just be like, I play this move from Wolverine every time because that's his best move.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the scenarios are also what makes the game even more interesting combat-wise, is when you go into a lot of the combat encounters, you know, they're not just kill all the enemies on the screen. There's a lot of different things you're trying to do. So that, like, you could be defending a point. You could be stealing intel out of the back of a truck. And it doesn't even matter if you kill all the enemies. You're just trying to survive long enough to gather that intel and take out this specific enemy that's guarding it, but he might have a lot of armor on, and you know, you've got to find a way to take that down and get him to stop guarding the truck. So depending on the objective, you're also bringing different characters as well. So it's just a very interesting game, the way that it makes you think of these combinations. You're also sending characters out on sort of side missions, and it'll be like, right, we need someone to send off and do this mission by themselves. If they're an X-Men, they're going to get extra points, or if they're an Avenger, they're going to get extra points. So you're sending out Iron Man on a mission, and then all of a sudden he's not available for the next actual three main mission you're doing. So you've got to change your team up compared to the standard combo that you're using. So just more ways that encourages you to really use everyone on the roster. And, you know, the other thing this game does, which I really want to point out, my favorite thing about the combat, I think in general, is just the way that it doesn't emphasize defensive positioning. This is something very unique to this type of game. And I think it's my new favorite standard on which I'm going to judge these games moving forward. Because, you know, a lot of the time, think of something like XCOM, which is the same studio for Axis. And you always want to make sure your characters are behind cover. It's like when you're moving your characters through a map, your main objective is going to be to make sure they're safe first. A lot of the time, you're going to make sure you're behind a wall or you've got some cover you can get behind. And it really limits where you can kind of move to or where you can stand your characters or, you know, how you're going to take down the certain mission that you're doing. But in this game, it doesn't matter where you're standing, or there's no cover system. Enemies can just run around the map and you can hit them and vice versa. And there's a lot less emphasis on movement in general. Like, you just get to move one character a turn. The rest of them are just going to stand there or move by default if they need to get within range for an attack. And so a lot of the positioning is you don't regard defense at all. You're literally just moving your characters into positions so they can either interact with the environment, or, you know, if they have an AoE for their attack, they got to go stand in the middle of the enemies. Or if their attack just shoots to the one side, you got to move them in range. But it's just a lot more about lining up your moves versus making sure you're safe. And I just love that offensive mindset and trying to set up these combos without having to worry about, oh, I really want to use this sweet attack, but if I stand here, I'll kill this guy and then these three guys will just nuke me because I'm not in cover. Like, that's not a consideration here. And I just think that really shakes it up in a way that is very uncommon, and was refreshing to kind of just not have that load on your mind, you know, because there's a lot of strategy in these games in terms of how you're going to kill the enemies, do your objectives. At least you don't have to worry about also constantly dying, which you do anyway, but not because of your mistake on defense or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And I think, like you said, like, it gives you a lot more flexibility to like pull off a combo with like what your skills and your characters can do in combination with each other, instead of like, yeah, that positioning. And I think it gives the enemies a chance to maybe be more interesting as well, because like a lot of the time, like if you're behind the cover like hoping to just pop out and like shoot your pistol twice, and then like that's what the enemy is doing too a lot of the time, right? So like you're behind one cover and then they're behind another cover two blocks away, and you're just like taking turns popping out. Yeah. And so like the enemies by that in that system are also not constrained with it, which means that maybe they can be a little bit more, I mean, a lot of times enemies are aggressive and they just like run out in the open and die on their way to get you. But like, you know, they can kind of design with that in mind as well and be also not limited by that same way.
That's a really good point. And you're totally right. You know, this game tosses a lot of enemies at you. There's a lot of enemies that actually don't have a health bar in this game too. So they're more just for building up a combo meter or getting enough kills so that you can regenerate a card play, for example. There's different mechanics that you can use, but it feels really good because you're constantly like, especially with someone like Wolverine or Captain America, you're like comboing a bunch of guys, you know, throwing the shields like bang, 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 knocks off all these guys. So satisfying. Yeah, this is just a great game. I've been thinking about it, you know, off and on since I beat it. And I'm just like, man, I would love to just go play some more missions. So there's an off chance, you know, there's DLC for this game with some new characters. And if there was a new storyline, I'm not sure if there is, like a new set of quests, I think I might be very interested. I don't know if it's enough to get me to go back to just kind of replay missions with more characters. But, you know, this game, I remember when we first saw it with the Metallica music. Yes. In the trailer.
That is still the first thing I think of whenever I think about Midnight Suns is how awesome that Metallica cover was.
It really was cool. Unfortunately, no Metallica actually in the game. That's too bad. But
that's a shame. You got to provide that yourself. Just have it on in the background.
That's right. Yeah. Great game, though. You know, it's front runner probably for my, well, once I beat Persona 3, I'm sure that'll be something I prefer. But this is a great game. It's definitely going to be, you know, one that I'm thinking about and I'll remember from this year. And definitely, along with Marvel Snap, has revived my love for Marvel in a way that maybe the movies are becoming a little stale and all that stuff. You know, we've all got that MCU fatigue, but Midnight Suns and Marvel Snap, man, these are like two of my favorite things that I've experienced.
Do you find that you use the Marvel Suns characters in Marvel Snap as a slight bias towards them?
I did start using Nico Minoru more in Snap. She was my favorite character in Midnight Suns for sure. She was super cool. Her abilities are very random, so it'll say like you're going to attack this enemy, but you don't know if it's going to do 10, 20, or 30 damage, for example, or the same for healing your team. It'll be like a very strong attack, but you can't choose your target, stuff like that. She's very chaotic, but she's got some very strong stuff, and I just thought her personality was really cool. She's like you know, total opposition to Iron Man a lot of the time, and very fun. Very fun. Everyone should play it. But yeah, I guess that's gonna, usually we have something else to talk about after the games, but we're at the end of the show today.
I mean, we kind of front loaded with some good games. I mean, we actually had a lot going on. There's a lot of good card based games right now. True. We got some indies. Ended up being a little bit of a cohesive bag we've got here, but
that happens all the time. You know, I love when that happens. We just kind of don't 100% plan what we're going to talk about or what the order is going to be, and it just leads together so nice. What a satisfying thing. Well, everyone, you can look forward to a return of good listening next episode, I believe. That'll be in 2 weeks' time. I'll be quizzing Kate on some video game music, along with probably, I don't know what other games we've been playing. We'll figure that out next time. But yeah, I guess that's going to close out the show. So just remember, until next time, this has been Cloud Control, the gaming podcast that's not just good, it's good enough. And we will see you on the next episode.